The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet.
This is an exclusive presentation of Podcast One Sports.
What up? This is Robert Ory.
Ory, three-pointer. Buries it.
You might know me as Big Shot Bob.
To Ory for three. Oh, unbelievable.
This guy is off the charts.
What's going on, Big Shot Bob?
Robert Ory from downtown.
Now that's making a statement.
It is the Big Shot Bob podcast. What's going on, everybody? I'm Rob Jenners. We have a wild, weird week here in Atlanta this week. In case you're new to the show, we run this show out of Atlanta, Georgia. Yes, Big Shot Bob is in Los Angeles, but myself and B-Dog produce this show out of the Braves Stadium, and Tuesday night, the Braves won a world championship. So needless to say, coordinating between us and Rob this week has been difficult, but we had a good idea and something I wanted to float over to you guys for a cool show this week. If you are new to this show, you may have missed some of the amazing guests we've had down the pipe in the last several months. I'm going to take you back to some of the best moments and the most amazing stories that some of these awesome guests have shared with us over the course of this show. We're going to start with Shaquille O'Neal. Week one, our very first show, I wanted to know the relationship between Rob and Shaq and the Lakers, and man, did we get stories from the big fella.
I remember that because I'm like, okay, I'm going in this season. I want some big money. And I'm looking around these guys that are averaging less than me, doing less than me, and they get more money. More. But the funny part is that is like, do you want to go to a bad team and make all that money, or do you want to be on a good team and make less money? For me, I say, okay, less money and be on a good team, because the most important thing to me was winning. I can't stand losing. But you go through anything I played in my life, I can't stand losing.
I had to deal with you a couple times in the locker room. Shaq, you in there bullshitting.
All right, so give me the one that stands out to you guys. You guys scuff it up?
Well, we put it this way. We had a really close team. Mm-hmm. Even though me and young fella was doing our marketing stuff. And Rob will tell you, a lot of that was marketing. Right, Rob?
Yeah.
A lot of that was he say something to his guy, Jim Gray. I say something to my Jim Hill. But when we came together, listen, him and I wasn't the only one talking. Bob had a voice. B-Shaw had a voice. And Rick Fox had a voice. And that's because we, you know, been together so long and we respect each other. So Rob and B-Shaw could look at me and tell when I was partying too much. Like, they wouldn't throw me the ball. They're like, Shaq, when I go throw you the ball, you got to do other stuff. So I would have to prove myself within the game. Like, I'd have to rebound, block shots, rotate. And now that they see that I'm waking up, now they give me the ball.
Hey, should we say what I used to come up to the free throw line and ask you all the time?
Yeah,
I think you should, yes.
Go ahead, ask them.
So we'd be in a game, and then, you know, I can look at Shaq and be like, dude, something's wrong. And I go up to the free throw line like, dude, did you fuck last night?
Yes.
He was like, what are you saying? Why are you talking? I was like, dude, you sweating like a pig, and you don't look like yourself, man. Did you fuck last night?
I love that.
I had this bar in New York called Sunshine. Rob, know what I'm talking about? I only ever 6 points when I went to Sunshine.
Oh, no.
Boy.
Oh, Lord. So,
it's funny, you know, think about big fella, you know, it's from the LSU days to, you know, him and I going up against each other in college. Is like, I've always had a respect for you, big fella, and I know that you've always had a respect for the game. That's one of the things that I really appreciate about you, how you can turn it on when you needed to, and you came with it. You know, I know we always talk about people flipping that switch, but there's only a few athletes that can flip that switch, and I know you are one of those guys that could do it at any time, and you enjoyed the moment and you enjoyed the game, and you know, you made everybody around you better. And I want to say thank you for making me better and appreciate you giving me a big contract.
Thank you. And you know, what I always love about you guys is you guys always let me do it my way. I know I didn't come in the training camp the best of shape, but that was just my theory. I'm like, look.
Well, you did one time.
Yeah.
Once?
The year you got MVP, you came in shit because
I did.
You had a new building, a new coach, a new attitude. You had to. We all did.
Week two was a pleasure to be joined by the head coach of the Golden State Warriors, Steve Kerr. He spent about an hour with us. If you haven't listened to that, go back and check out episode 2. Here is Rob professing his love to his kindred spirit, Steve Kerr.
Thank you so very much for taking the time out, man. I really appreciate
sure.
it. So you don't even know how much of a fan I am of yours.
Stop it.
I'm
no,
serious.
Please go on. Go on, please.
Yeah,
flatter our guests.
Because I feel like we're a kindred spirit, man. You know, we both wore 25. We both, you know, right. and for 10 years, we own the NBA, man. That's what I'm talking about. For 10 years, you and I, we own the NBA. And people don't even know that. So I said, when I started this podcast, the first person I said I wanted on the show, I said, I got to get Steve Kerr.
I reached
out to our man and said, hey, yo, give me Steve Kerr. He's like, I own it. I didn't think it was going to happen, but man, thanks for being here, man. Appreciate
I love that
it.
Stat. Is that stat? Is that the 10 years in a row? Is that one of us was in the finals or one of us actually won?
We won.
One of us won a championship yeah. for 10 straight years.
Yeah. 94-95. Then you're three, you're four in a row.
That's right.
And I think, see, people never talk about that. You won four rings in a row. That's impressive, man.
And then you won the next three with the Lakers, right?
Correct. Uh-huh.
And then I went back to the Spurs in 03 and won.
Yep.
And did that end the streak or did you go?
Yeah, you ended the streak because I won the two back-to-back, then I won the three in a row, and I only won five.
And then you won in 05 and 07 also?
Correct, yes.
Yeah. So 10 in a row and like 12 out of 14 or something like that.
Exactly, see.
We are burdened with remembering all the championships we've won and in the order in which we've won them.
You know, if some GM had been smart, they would have signed us both to like max deals and we would have just kept winning titles because it was for sure us. You know,
yes.
It was definitely all about us.
You guys carried the weight, right?
Yeah, you know, right. Steve and I put in work, you know. He's just, you know, those other guys, they didn't come to play. We came to play.
Now, what about guys that Rob played with, like Ty Lue, head coach of the Los Angeles Clippers? Yeah, they're still good friends, and man, they've got stories to share.
Hey Ty, you know your former team and now your rivals. You know the Lakers were here in Atlanta, and obviously you've been seeing it all over ESPN and everything about the heckling fan. You know they got kicked out, her and her husband, and you know all of that. Was there ever a point in time in your career where you know you may have had an issue where a fan has said something and this kind of made you turn around and almost want to say something back? You have any history with any crazy fans?
All the time, you know, all the time. But a lot of mine came from just the AI situation. So
yeah.
you know,
oh yeah,
you know, you get tired of hearing that. And
I was going to get to that later, man. do you realize, Ty, how mad I get when people don't know the situations? Oh, he crossed him over and he fell. I'm like, no, he did not. He tried to. He contested the shot and slipped over, and AI stepped over. I'm like. That it just makes me so mad that everybody like, oh, he crossed him up and made him fall. I'm like, no, he didn't. So look at the whole play. All they see is a step over.
It used to be so frustrating. I used to get so mad, but like now, it doesn't turn me into a star. Like,
that's got me a couple jobs. About. I mean, damn.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like I could win five championships as a coach, and they just talk about the AI step over. So that's okay, you know.
Also had the pleasure of talking to Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban. He was amazing and talked a lot about his relationship with Adam Silver versus the up and down relationship, let's call it, he had with David Stern.
You know, you mentioned Adam Silver earlier, and I've always enjoyed the conflict between you and David Stern. You know, God rest his soul. And so is it a different relationship? It seems like it's a more bending situation with Adam. Adam seems like he bends more for the players and for the owners, but David Stern was more stricter. So is it true that Adam is a little bit more of a joy to work with? You know, I'm not saying anything bad about David Stern. I just used to love the conflicts y'all you had.
David and I got along great, right? So what happened outside in the media and the fines, right? It was totally different how we were one-on-one. Right. Because we both had it's almost like the anthem thing. Right. We both had the best interest of the NBA. Now, we disagreed on how to get there a lot. Right. A lot.
Yeah. Oh, but, I did too agree. I agree with you on a lot of things you would say.
Right. And so, you know, we disagreed on a lot of stuff, but we both had the best interest of the NBA. Yeah. But Adam is a little bit more bending. He's a little bit more open-minded than David was. David had his vision where it's like, this is the way we have to do it, right? And that's why we conflicted more, because, mm-hmm. when he was set in stone on things, and I was like, yo, it's not 1985 anymore, David, And so I was trying to push things, when I was the young guy, just raising hell. But now people are used to me too, right? It's just like, I've been doing the same things for 20 years. Like, even the refs don't even look at me anymore.
And how about this one from early on in the show? We were joined by a Hall of Famer, one of the best receivers to ever play the game of football, the legendary Megatron, Calvin Johnson. And what does Rob want to talk to him about? Dancing with the Stars. This is classic.
So, it's we all have life after, and we do things to reinvent ourselves. And I see that you're reinventing yourself in a couple of different ways. Dancing with the Stars, snowboarding, skiing, and all these things. I am so afraid to go skiing, and I was so afraid to do Dancing with the Stars. They asked me to do it, and I was like, oh no, I'm not doing
it. You turned it down?
Yeah, I turned it down because it's like, and because after watching Clyde Drexler do it, I'm like, I'm a little bit way older and retired than Mr. Johnson here. So I was like, that was so crazy.
how tall are you, man?
I'm 6'9".
See, I'm 6'5". The term is being soft in your knees on the show, and it just means like kind of being squatty, but not noticing, not too noticeable. And you're 6'9", and these dancers are 5'2", 5'3", 5'4". Yeah. You might get one that's 5'6". My partner was like 5'4". They're gonna be hugging your waist. It's awkward as hell. So,
we know exactly. Then you got, and if my wife been like, you got to grab a where? You got to do what? I'm like, no, that's not happening.
You have to have that conversation going in. You can't.
Even being with LA, I had a chance to do a TV show, and it's like, oh, I got to kiss the girl. She's like, oh, no, you can't do that. No, you can't go on that show. So, to be able to have to be that intimate with another female, I know your wife was at every practice. I know she was at every show. Instead of like,
funny thing about that, I had Lindsay over and heard her, I think is her husband at the time. Yeah. They came over to the house when we first was about to start the show, she's like, she's up front. She's like, hey, there's going to be times when, you got to put your hand on my ass, you got to be there. You got to be real. I'm like, I'm glad you said this in front of my wife so that when it happened.
You were there for this, honey. We had this conversation.
Yeah.
And how about one of Rob's former teammates, the one and only Mario Elie, talking about the kiss of death in Houston to this day is just outstanding. Mario, how much do you get the kiss of death around Houston? How often does that happen? It's got to happen
a time.
Got to happen a time.
Nonstop. Right? What's great, man, Robert said, when you win it for the first time in your city, you're golden in that city. Still to this day, I took my son to a John Lucas workout this morning. And you know how John is, Rob. He's on my son. He said, Mario Elie got a name in this town. Don't be messing up your child's name. You know, for the kiss of death. And that's 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And we're still relevant, which is great. It's good to hear the people talking about Robert for the Hall of Fame. I mean, 7 rings. Come on, man. Come on, man. The dude he wasn't waving a towel like ML Carr. Robert was impactful all 7 of those championship teams, man. So that got to be in consideration, man. It's one of the greatest winners. Come on. Give me a break, man.
I always say this to a lot of people. I say, I blame Mario for all the antics now, because after your kiss of death shot, nobody ever did anything when they made a 3. You think about it. You made a 3 and you got your ass back. After your kiss of death shot, everybody want to have these antics when they shoot a 3. And I'm like, I blame Mario Elie for that shit, man. You just shot it.
Hey, Rob, it's funny you say that, Rob, because Nick Bavetta during the timeout came up to me and said, I could have gave you a tech on that. That's taunting. And he did not. He came up to me. I don't know. One of the refs came up to me and said, that wasn't cool, to do that. That was on the 20. Who cares, right, Rob?
Exactly.
We were down 3-1. They talking mess. We got the last laugh and send them home, baby.
I don't know. A lot of people know this. We were in game four, game four, when we went down 3-1, that was after we got that win. And then Danny Ainge did that nasty shit to Mario. And Mario had to have a lot of cool. Because I know me, every time I see Danny Ainge, I'll be whooping that ass.
But I don't know how you didn't whip his ass on the floor.
I love when Rob threw the towel in his face. That's my boy right there.
Yeah.
But the thing about it, people don't understand. Like,
I said, that's my man right there.
This is how much love we had for Mario and the team. Because people don't realize, and when we went down 3-1, that game, we went down 3, we didn't even care. Our whole thing was to try to punish Danny Ainge that game. I mean, he came off screens. We were taking fouls because that was all we was trying to do.
Just put him on the floor.
We put him on the floor. And then we went down 3-1. But after we got our punishment, it kind of scared him because he knew we didn't fucking care. We were coming at his throat, and we were trying to knock him out. And
hey, Rob, I'm watching some of those games. You hitting them with an elbow, Vernon hitting them, I'm hitting them, Kenny, Stan. Everybody took their shots on them. And that's what made our team great, man. We had each other's back. Even when our backs was against the wall, ain't nobody pointing fingers on our team. We always have belief. You know, when we're in the corner, we relish being in the corner. We had so many mentally tough players. Rob stepping up one game, Vernon, Kenny, Sam, me. We always had a guy beside our great center and Akeem Olajuwon, and then Clyde came the next year. We always had guys stepping up. That was the great thing about that back-to-back championship team, man. We always, always had guys stepping up. Robert, 95. Robert don't score the whole game. He hit the biggest shot in the game in San Antonio, Western Conference Final.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, always we had guys always ready to make the big play.
And like you said, you know, refs, you know, came down and said, you know, I could have given you a tech for that. And I'm glad that he didn't. You know, I'm, you know, not only just working in media, but also being a fan of this game. I like those moments where guys can, you know, kiss of death. You know, guys can do other things that historically people will remember. And the league tried to not take those things away from those guys. This is a game. I understand sportsmanship, but I also understand showmanship. You know, being able to do the thing.
The emotion. Like, right. If a guy get dumped on, let him just stare at him real quick and run down court.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Dude make a great block. Let him stand down real quick and run down court. You know, pick his pocket. You know, he try to chase you down and dump. I remember Jason Williams at Sacramento. I was in San Antonio at the time. He picked my pocket. And I went, man, you know when you get stripped, Rob, you run down fast. And
hard as hell.
This dude quick dumped it on me, Rob, and grabbed some popcorn on the way up. Put some popcorn out for him. He grabbed some popcorn, yo, and I made quarts out of that. And I'm like, man, like you said, it's entertainment. Let guys show their emotion just a little bit, especially now. The refs are so sensitive now. Players can't even talk to the referee, man. You know, let guys, especially in the playoffs, it's intensity. Every possession is very valuable. Guys should be able to let it out just a little bit.
We were also joined several weeks into the show by the legend, Gary Payton, the best trash talker in the history of the NBA. We wanted to get into that, and man, Gary was not shy in talking about why he talked so much trash.
And we didn't grow up with each other like that on that AAU crap, man.
Yeah.
It's like if me and Rob, we played against each other and he was from another part of Oakland, man, I'd tell Rob, man, look here, we ain't on team. I'm going to beat your ass tonight. We'll talk about that tomorrow, dude. I ain't your partner right now. You holler at me, man, when we get on the block, man. But right now, I'm about to get at your head, man. And I ain't on that. I ain't trying to be your partner right now because you trying to get where I'm getting and I'm trying to get where you get. We trying to get the same thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
But it's so much like you want to be homies. You want to have your girlfriends with each other, man. And y'all hanging out at each other's house, having cookouts and taco tunes and all that crap. I ain't on that, man. I ain't trying to do all that. I ain't doing that with you. That ain't going to work for me. You know what I'm saying? After the game, man, what's happening, buddy? You want to have a drink? Let's go ride with it. You know what I'm saying? Then we're going to talk about the game. You know what I'm saying? I should have gotten your head during that time. But, you know, it's right, Rob. We ain't in that AAU crap. We didn't have that, so it is what it is.
Yeah, GP, you know, everybody knows that you are the master at trash talking. No one thinks GP, no one's better than GP when it comes to the gift of gab. And there's an art to that. Everybody can't do it. Everybody's not able. Just talk about, you know, where that came from when it came to you and the art that goes into getting under guys' skin when you're on the floor, when you're talking to them, because everybody can't do it.
Well, you know, that's true, you know. But growing up in the streets of Oakland, California, we're going from block to block, man. We had to jump over gates to get to the playgrounds, to the concrete. And they used to have A5 waiting for us. Mm-hmm. Our five used to be coming. You know what I'm saying? So we had to talk trash. So if you're in their neighborhood, if you try to win, they're going to want to fight you. So you got to get down back at you. You know what I'm saying? Especially when you getting somebody and you start talking and you start seeing that affecting their gang, and they start only paying attention to you, and they start being like, man, I'm trying to go at you, and they start messing up. And then they can't back it up, and you killing them. I'd be like, oh, I got something right here, because I'm going to get him so hot, he going to forget about these other folks. You know what I'm saying? Yep. And now we going to start winning the game, and that's where it came. And then my daddy used to do it all the time, too, man. He used to talk big trash. And he used to always tell me, boy, if you let anybody get at you, you better not bring your ass home. Because you ain't coming up in here. You know what I'm saying? And I see it, because I'm going to slap you as soon as you get in the door. And I'll be like, man, I don't even want to deal with my pops like that, man. So I'm like, I'm going to do this and get amped and get you 30 and have that other dude out of his game. And my daddy going to be like, yeah, that's what I taught you. Yeah. And that's just the way it came from. And you got to have an art at it. Because if you take it personal, it's all bad. Yeah. If somebody say something about my wife, okay, say something about your wife. Who cares, man? You was with her last night? You should have been. You know what I'm saying? I was with her too. She must have snuck out. You know what I'm saying? Let her sneak out. Came back in enough time. So it's all good.
We've also had the pleasure during this show to be joined by arguably one of the greatest coaches in college football right now, the one and only Dabo Swinney. And Dabo and Rob go way back to their Alabama days. And right out of the gate, Rob wasted no time in drawing divides between Clemson and their Alabama roots. And thank God Dabo was a good sport about this.
Hey, there's the man.
Don't let Coach Sweeney interrupt story time with Rob Dory, you know?
So she sat there for 3 months and never knew how to pronounce my name. And someone says, why didn't you tell me? I said, you didn't ask. I said, everybody in the studio is calling me Ori, and you're the one that's forever saying Hori. I'm like, come on now.
Dabo, he's a little butthurt. He got his name pronounced wrong this morning on Friday.
Hey, with a name like Dabo, you don't think I've had my name pronounced wrong? Sweeney, Swiney, Dabo, I've had it all.
Oh, hey, man. Just like Debo, that'd be like afraid of people. Like, oh, it's Debo.
That's Debo Sweeney. Stay away from that guy. How are you, Coach?
Man, I'm great. I've been looking forward to this. This is super cool. Big shot, yeah. Big shot, Bob.
What's up, man?
It's one of my heroes, man.
When we first started this podcast, you know, you were the first person I said one of the first people. I said, I got to get Dabo in so we can talk about
right.
Old school. I'm serious. You know, you think about it. What did my son say to you when he came up to you? He said, yeah, my dad told me to tell you what, something he still would kick your ass and take my bowl.
Oh, I love it, man. Yeah. I got some great stories. Mm. Rob don't know. He and I were almost teammates. He don't know that. But two things. You and I, all right, I'll never forget it, ever. And he's from Andalusia, Alabama, middle of nowhere. I'm from Pelham, Alabama, at the time, middle of nowhere. The fall of 88, we show up in Tuscaloosa. Of course, he was still Big Shot Rob back then, too. You know, he was this long, gangly guy and Mr. Basketball and all that stuff. And I'm coming to Tuscaloosa, and I'm going to either walk on the basketball team or the football team, and I'm not really sure. But I know I'm going to walk. My love was basketball. That's always been my love. That's been my passion. And I literally, in fact, you can appreciate this. Every time I see Wimp Sanderson, I tell him that. I remind him of that, and he goes, I'd have cut you so fast. I'd have cut you. You know, but you can hear that. And so I go to orientation. The Ferguson Center. You remember the old Ferguson
Center?
Yeah,
I remember the Ferguson
Center. I go to orientation. I mean, I don't know anything. You got to understand now, nobody in my family ever been to college. So this was like,
seriously?
I am like showing up, trying to figure it out. I don't know anything about anything. And I go to this Ferguson, I get dropped off, and I'm in there. And I see Robert Ori, and I see Eric Curry. All right?
The EC.
I'm telling you, And Eric Curry looked like a basketball player, but he was a defensive end, big-time signee coming in to play football. And I knew who Robert was, and I'm just sitting there going, oh, my God. They were the tallest human beings I had ever seen in my life. And so, anyway, I decided to do football. They had 90 scholarships at the time, and basketball only had about 15. And but we had some pickup games along the way, that's for sure.
Yes, yes, yes. Man, it's been fun, man, watching you ascend to greatness, man. This guy, it's so weird just to have this conversation with you, because I've followed you and I've always rooted for you. And, you know, I said, one of these days we're going to cross paths again. And, you know, hold on, I'm getting a little hot here. So,
here we go. You know,
some subliminal messages going on here. You know what I mean?
I take my shirt up.
Oh, yeah, look at him. Now he's going against us. Jeez. Gee, we've started the propaganda war for college sports.
Subliminal messages.
Oh, there it is.
Is that subliminal? Is that too strong?
Oh, no.
You are a man divided, Dabo. I tell you, man.
Hey, talk about kicking a man when he was down, boy.
But I don't think you guys understand. Dabo is from the heart of Tide Country. He can't go anywhere else. Let me just say that. I bet you Auburn can offer him $1 billion to coach there, and he couldn't go coach there because he wouldn't have any more family.
That would be a problem.
And I'll tell you, if you haven't listened to the Dabo Swinney Show, go back and find it. He had one of the most inspirational lines toward the end of that interview that I think I've ever heard, where he talks about greatness not being something that you achieve, but greatness is always under construction. And funny enough, I grabbed my pen and I wrote that down. Greatness is always under construction. A cool lesson from one of the coolest interviews we've had on the show with the one and only Dabo Swinney. And we're moving on now to Muggsy Bogues. So this is where we start to kind of hit our stride of 90s NBA superstars. And with Space Jam 2 coming out over the summer, of course, we had to pick Muggsy's brain about what it was like on the set of the original Space Jam. And man, Muggsy had stories about Grandmama Larry Johnson.
Well, Muggsy, you know, obviously LeBron is starring in the new Space Jam. You know, he put out the promo not too long ago. It comes out in July. So obviously you were in the OG, the original Space Jam, which everybody holds so near and dear to their hearts. You know, what are you expecting? Have you seen the clip? What are you expecting from it? And what are some stories that you have from the set when you were shooting the original Space Jam?
Well, you know, I have no idea what this one going to be about. I mean, I haven't even really seen. I see a little small clips of some of the trailer, but not much to have a true comment on it. I don't know. I mean, maybe they're going to save the universe because we saved the planet. So I have no clue. But, you know, it was just fun back when we did it. You know, the characters that we had, myself, LJ and Sean Bradley and Charles and Patrick and MJ. I mean, on the set, we had no clue that it was going to turn out to be an iconic movie. And I remember one day we had a morning shoot and LJ decided he wanted to get his hair cut. But it was nobody on the set to cut it besides this guy, a Caucasian man who never cut an African-American hair in his life.
So oh my goodness.
He experimented with Al and gave him a bowl cut of it. So long story short, we had to cancel the shoot that morning.
Wow.
Because he was not going on camera with that type of haircut. And they had to have somebody come over to tighten him up and so we can, you know, be able to shoot it. But it was such a fun time on that set. And, you know, and today, I mean, the movie Space Jam that's coming out now, I'm quite sure it's going to be catered to the modern day in some sort of way, and where it fits LeBron and his character and what he meant, you know, to the game and so forth. So I'm looking forward to seeing how it turned out.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. On behalf of all Caucasian men, I apologize. Yeah. I don't know what the hell that man's thinking, picking up a pair of clippers. Yeah.
I don't know what the hell Larry was thinking, thinking he could cut it. Like, oh, you never cut a black man's hair?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What the hell are you doing, man?
You got to know, you got to grip that shit the right way, you know. You got to pull it. They don't understand when you cut the black man's hair, you got to grip it.
Yeah, and then got to be tightened up right. You got to have it right. You know, you got to go. You can't go against the grain. You can't go against
right.
the grain.
Can't go against the grain.
See, we don't know any of this. No. White guys know Flo-Bee. We just know, like, okay, just keep it all one distance, and I'm good. That's it. That's all I got for that. I apologize. I'm sorry.
Oh, man.
All right, and a couple more classics here. Maybe the best guest we've ever had on this show is going to go to Vernon Maxwell, who, obviously, if you're familiar with the Rockets in the 90s, Mad Max was a mainstay and a big lightning rod for that team. We talked to Rudy T about it and a number of others. But when Mad Max joined us, man, he was not shy in telling us what happened in 95 and why he was the way he was in the league. What got you to that point in 95 when you decided that was it, I'm gonna bounce? Like, what was kind of like the mindset leading up to it, you know?
I mean, I just coming back from the suspension, 10-game suspension, and I mean, I guess I was in my feelings too, because the way they handled the situation with Clyde, I mean, it was cool. I didn't have a problem with it. It's just the way they handled it. You know, I know I was suspended and everything, but I thought they should at least like said something to me, like, okay, Max, you know, you're suspended, and you know, and just tell me, I'm tired of that shit. We're tired of this shit, and just tell me what the fuck was going on. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I deserved that much, you know, especially after the special season that we had before and all the years I put into it, you know, into the organization. And I just felt like, you know, I was disrespected. And then when I came back in the Utah series, but Rudy T was, he really didn't play me. Motherfucker, he like sat me, you know, and then towards the end he tried to put me in and shit and I was like, that's some bullshit. And I was mad as hell after that first game, and I was really upset, because I was like, well, damn, this motherfucker did me like that. And I understand we got Clyde and all that, and, you know, I understand the political shit that goes along with this shit, you know. You know, I was understandable, you know, and you know, we needed another piece, because we really wasn't playing, you know, well that year in 95. At that time, we were struggling a little bit, and we needed an extra boost, you know, like another boost. Like a guy like Clyde came on and gave us another boost of energy, I felt, and it was good for the team. But I mean, shit, I mean, goddamn. I mean, I just didn't think that Rudy T would do me the way, you know, what happened. But I don't think it was, I just think it was much. I mean, when I think about it a lot now, and I think about it all the time, you know, I mean, it was probably one of the worst decisions of my life, like I said, back in the documentary. Still, though, I just felt disrespected, and I shouldn't have left, you know what I mean? But, you know, Robert, you know how I was, Robert. Once I make my damn mind up, but I'm going to do something. You know, that's the fuck I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Like, if I tell you, I'm going to slap the shit out of this motherfucker. You know, I'm going to slap the shit out of it.
Hey, but you know, for people who listen, you really have to go see our documentary on Clutch City. We touch on a lot of things, you know. We touch on especially in that 95 season and how MJ came back, and how the rivalry between MJ and Vernon was, and a lot of people don't know that. We were playing Chicago for the first time, and I've never heard two guys call someone a black MF as much as Vernon and Joyce.
Wow, really?
So I'm listening to, like, we gonna bust your ass, yeah, young. And then Vernon looks at me and says, young fellow, they're about to fucking give Scotty the fucking business. Yes, Scotty.
Yeah,
I'm like, don't put me in that, man. I'm just new to this shit. Don't get me in the rivalry yet. So Vernon used to talk so much shit. And, you know, if you go back and look at all the tapes, everybody always talk about, you know, matchups. They talk about MJ and Reggie, but shit, you really need to watch MJ and Vernon, because people don't know Vernon would give MJ the business just like MJ would give everybody else the business.
So damn right. That's right.
People don't always say, oh, the Bulls would have got you. No, they fuck, they wouldn't have got us, man.
Because
we had too much shit, and they couldn't guard Dream. And
it they ain't had nobody for that.
Revamped that whole team, but everybody in the world want to be like, oh, MJ, you forget we had a fucking GOAT too. You know?
That's right, Rod.
Hey, Vern, let me say this. You know, listening to a lot of you guys, you know, from the 80s and the 90s speak, and I understand it was a different league than what it is today, but y'all was some angry folks, boy. You got Rod throwing towels at folks. You wanting to go upside folk head. You got Latrell Sprewell choking the hell out of people. Y'all some angry men back in the 80s and the 90s, man. I don't know what it was, but y'all some angry folks.
I think that's the way we were brought. We grew up playing that way. You know, back then, you know, you had to, you know, you play with older men back when we come up playing back in the day. You know, we ain't always play with people our age. We always play with the older guys and shit. And that's the way we had to fight out there, man, to play them, stay on the motherfucking floor. If you ain't fighting, your ass ain't playing.
Hey, it's funny you say that, man. If you go back now and you go to the playground compared to when we playground, you had to put a brick or a stick on the side of the playground. I said, all right, fuck with me. I'm going to go get that brick.
I'm going to go with my bus in that
head. Nowadays, guys like, oh, you found me. Okay, I'm sorry, friend.
Yeah, it's your ball. Take out. It's hard for me to watch that shit now.
And we'll close it out this week with some of our favorite guest moments with the one and only Jeannie Buss, the owner, president, CEO. She's got like 40 titles of the Los Angeles Lakers. Obviously, everybody in the basketball world knows Jeannie well, and we had the pleasure of having her on the show. And we talked a lot about Phil and Rob's relationship, and that just took a turn to boosting up Rob's ego.
Phil's not just a coach of basketball. He's a coach of people.
And I didn't really understand him till after you leave. It's almost like, you know, I'm not going to say I was a child with him, but a child, and you talk to your parents and they tell you, wait till you grow up, you understand what I'm talking about. And it didn't hit me until after I started coaching my son's AAU team and understanding the mindset of a coach and the mindset of players. And so I was like, okay, this is what he was talking about. You know, okay, I could be a great coach one day. It's just, but you have to have the right mindset, and you got to be a good leader, and you got to lead everybody, and you have to lead everybody different ways. And so Phil was great at that, even though he and I never had a conversation, a full-on conversation, but you know, it was, I got the message. And sometimes you don't need to have a conversation to get the message.
Well, I would tell you, Robert, that he carried that relationship with you home. Like he felt like there was something that kept you guys from connecting. And, you know, you can have that conversation now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would, you know, put you two together, because whatever conversation that you guys didn't have could be had now, and it would have the same meaning to him, because he really, really cared about you. Excuse me, a lot. I'm not going to cry, but you were such an important part of our success and our winning, and he did not take you for granted.
Yeah, you know, I think that had a lot to do with me, and the reason behind me putting up a wall is because when I was with Houston, I developed that really close bond with Rudy in the front. And then all of a sudden you get traded, and people don't understand when you get traded, it can mess with you mentally, because it can become from, you know, open arms to putting up that wall. And for me, I always put up that wall when it came to coaches and, you know, the staff and everybody, because I didn't want to get too close, because I didn't want my feelings to get involved in. All of a sudden you get traded and you don't want to be traded. Now you pissed off at the world, you know, and I want to apologize to you. When that happened to me with you guys, I was pissed off, because I felt like I could do so much for the organization and win. But, you know, I was mad because I was leaving my home, you know, and I was pissed off and I didn't want to talk to anybody. I remember I don't think you even know this story. I was out one night in LA and your father sent somebody over to me. He says, you know, your dad wants to speak to me. I said, I don't want to talk to him. I said, I even left the place where you were, because I was so mad. And I sit back after my retirement, and when I retire, and I think about the relationships I didn't form because I put up that wall. Mm-hmm. Because it happened so early in my career that it made me not want to become family, because that's what you are, family. It did not want me to become friends with the people that could, you know, be a great part of your life. And I just want to say thank you for allowing me back into the family and not, you know, taking what happened and be like, oh, he's a bad egg. Cause I'm really the best person you will ever get to know.
Well, yeah, I know that. And still know that. And my dad knew that.
Like, and he's
that,
told that, us that I, many times.
I'm just so glad that we have this opportunity to have this conversation. Cause that to me is the hardest thing to go through in this business is like players leaving. And, you know, in my, the night of the ring ceremony, I purposely talked about the players who were not there that were, you know, were now on other teams. And, you know, it's difficult on both sides, and it's completely understandable why you would have felt that way, being traded. And, you know, but, and, you know, it's like, you should feel that, you know, emotion and not discount it. But it, from where I sit and what my dad taught me is that like that door is always open. Like, and it was, there were no hard feelings, even if you know, went on and won more championships without us. Which is always the best of revenge, right? Shaq did that as well. But, you know, it is, we're just so happy, you know, having you on the you know, on Spectrum, and the ratings are so good, for our fans at, you know, watching the game, pregame, postgame. And you're such a big part of that because you keep it real. You're honest. And that's what like Chip Kern was so good at, like,
very good.
You know, sometimes the organization needs to get a little bit of like, hey, you got to, like, you know, little kick in the butt, and, you know, you keep it real. And I think that's why fans adore you for many reasons, Robert, because you delivered one of the greatest moments in Laker history.
And there's going to be no doing this podcast with him anymore now. Jeez.
There's going to be no doing this anymore. This is important. No.
Should I do this now?
All right. Thanks for joining us for this special episode of the Big Shot Bob podcast. We are back next week with our normal to-do and banter. And oh my God, Aaron Rodgers and Ben Simmons, and just so much going on to talk about. We're going to get into all of that next week. Follow us on Twitter at Big Shot Bob Pod, BigShotBobPod@gmail.com. If you want to shoot us a question for Rob, we will have the postgame presser return next week as well. And we'll holler at you then. Thanks, guys.
Follow the show on Twitter at Big Shot Bob Pod for links to all our guests and all sorts of fun. The Big Shot Bob Pod is a presentation of Live by Live's Podcast One and Podcast One Sportsnet.
Hey, what's up? It's Meta World Peace here. And I got my new podcast, Metaphorically Speaking. We're going to be talking about mental health, basketball, and a lot of tough topics. All that and more with my friends and celebrities. So make sure you check out my podcast, Metaphorically Speaking, every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify.